Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Sarah Allen, and I'm the CEO and founder of The Labs.
Farah, thanks so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Can you tell us, before we talk about your current company and your role as the CEO and founder of that, give us a thumbnail version of your career timeline.
Oh, thumbnail. Okay, I'll try. Well, you know, my career started in architecture and construction. Yes, I was a creative, but I was also someone whose parents wouldn't allow me to be an artist. So I became an architect. And, you know, through my time in architecture, it was great. But then I realized I couldn't be Frank Gehry. I had to, you know, first start out making bathroom remodels. And I just didn't like that feeling. So technology was my next step of my career. Technology just opened up so much doors for me just to create what I wanted to. It's a really, you know, fascinating thing to know that we can build anything via technology. Started my own management consultant company, was very successful with that, but unfortunately I had to give all the products I created away, and I wanted to keep the products. I wanted to build a company. I just had that strong desire and a lack of opportunity as a woman and trying to, you know, quickly expand my career into executive roles. This didn't seem like the opportunities were there for me. So I made my own opportunity and started The Labs.
I love what you just said. I decided to create my own opportunity. That's a very powerful statement in a way that I also operate in that way, that I'm a creator first, I'm a builder first. And if there is, you know, at the end of the day, it's not about knocking on the door, it's just almost building your own door. So that definitely resonates, which leads me to that further point. Tell us a little bit about what you have built. What are you currently working on?
Yeah, so I have built a way for creators to express themselves online. So that's via collaboration, having very visual collaborative tools, which ultimately right now, all the tools that are collaborative are made by engineers that may not be in the creative industry because they're giving you black and white and gray user designs, where creatives are so involved in the world and so visual that those options weren't available. So I created options that were more visual, more customizable to how people like to create content, create music, share videos, all those things we've built into The Labs. But because of COVID, we made a shift in focus because we saw our users in film and theater and music wanting to present in the way that we've created our technology, which was very visual, very creative minded and focused, but they didn't have technology out there or platforms that gave them options to express themselves and present their content. So we took our same ideas behind The Labs and put them into an event presentation tool that allows you to fully customize experiences that fit your brand, fit your line of thinking, your creativity. So that's something new that we've done, and it's been really successful so far. We're glad we made it. And even as the world is opening up and things are more hybrid, we find that most businesses are continuing their online presence because they went from local to international overnight, and you can't go back, which is great for us because we are there to support your daily experience creative needs.
That's exciting and definitely it makes sense, especially in this current market with everyone being virtual, everyone trying to collaborate together in a very dispersed environment. I'm pretty sure, you know, there's a lot of demand for a service like The Labs. Is that something that you aspired to create, or was that the nature of you pivoting and adjusting to the current market?
It was always the focus. The focus was always, how do we put how do we have people own their work? And it grew from, hey, I'm going to help you as a musician who's creating music with someone else own, you know, the content you're making and make sure that, you know, technically you have knowledge as to who wrote what and when, and that's important for your profession. It went from that to where it is now, but the mission is still the same. We're still having you as a creator on how you present, how you work, how you, you know, collaborate with people.
Oh, that's pretty exciting. And how long have you been building your company?
We started in 2018.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about that initial phase, the very first portion of your journey, because usually that's, you know, that's the hardest. At the end of the day, there's a lot of decisions to be made, whether you bootstrap and build it yourself, or you go the venture route, or you raise and, you know, angel investments. The reason I ask is because that's my passion. That's the where I operate in venture capital space and as an angel investor. And for me, it's always exciting to hear these very early stage, the napkin stage for the founders. In a way, what were some of the decisions that you had to make and what did you learn from that?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's still hard. It's just a different level of hardness.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. It never gets easy, right?
It never gets easy, but the stakes are just higher at the top, right? And the top seems like it never ends. So in the beginning, it was quite difficult. Of course, you know, I'm an African-American woman and all these numbers are just moving against you. But when you're starting, you can't think about that. Obviously, you know it, it exists, but you have to push through it. So I didn't know how to operate a startup. I knew how to operate a management consulting business, totally know how to create products. But when I got into the startup phase, there was a special thing that I felt like I was missing and I couldn't find it. That formula that makes me Mark Zuckerberg. And I went looking and I, you know, it was very hard to find resources when I started out. I started looking with this idea in 2017. So I found Georgia has an organization called ATDC. I found them, they, you know, supported startups by giving them classes and you know, learning about how to do customer discovery, all the beginning phases of building the idea, making sure that the MVP is there. Didn't quite get everything I needed from that because I still, I was required to know something before I even got there. And I didn't even know what I was required to know, but I wasn't getting that help. That I personally needed. Then there was an organization I heard about called Digital Undivided, and they spoke to me. They literally spoke to me. They said, if you're a Black or a Latina entrepreneur, then we want you. We want to help you build your company. And so I, you know, tried twice and I got in the second time, and they spent almost a year working with me on, you know, learning the ins and outs of building a business and was very personalized and created a huge network across the United States with people that they know. So once I left there, I went into an accelerator. Comcast had an accelerator, or does. And I, you know, even grew from there. I think there is where I became really serious. Like, this is for real. Everyone's kind of, you know, I have backing that is social proof. My family, you know, the two people that did have money, you know, invested. So it was my first like $10,000 that came in because they realized that maybe she's on to something and we understand this type of organization is backing you. And, you know, started to build, you know, never really enough money to build what the idea was, but I trickled in and was very creative as to how I got what I needed to prove that we are an investable company. And eventually after a year, you know, of course there, the reality is it is hard to raise an African-American woman. Like, I can't avoid that. Though I can ignore it, it doesn't ignore me. So I have to become even better at what I do and do less with more, do more with less. And then eventually, you know, I proved out undeniably that this was an investable company to someone. And, you know, I got my first $200,000 from Quake Capital. With Quake's money, it was like the first time I had just enough to like build more quickly and faster and get more people in, make more deals. And, you know, the future just looked a lot brighter. I never felt that sense of, hey, I got, you know, some more support here. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm building something that normally takes like $3 million to start up, and with an investment of, at that time, 250K is what I invested, that invested capital from. And, you know, luckily we were able to do something with that. We were able to get customers able to come, but, you know, again, there is that thing that you do need capital to scale. It's just unavoidable no matter what you do. You do need it unless you are doing something extra special and your strategy is like, your product and strategy is just, it's just unique in that way. Those are the people you hear about in the newspaper. They're not normal people. So, you know, at some point I needed to raise again. And luckily I met Abigail Disney and Adrian Becker, who own a theater, a media company called Level 4. And they do invest in minorities and just women and in media and entertainment. And they invested $1 million in our company last year. And because of that, I was able to get to the next level. It's like the, I was talking about these levels. It progresses and it's not always easier the level, because now I see why people do raise $3, $4, $5 million, because I can't hire the necessary folks to handle all the influx of new customers we're getting in. So just, you know, from beginning to the where we are now, I'm just realizing and maturing as a CEO, a founder, someone that does see a huge multi-billion dollar opportunity, and seeing how people actually do get there. I'm just getting that knowledge or that insight into that space, because I'm here. I have some capital to deploy. I do have backing from people that, you know, can bring in more opportunity and more investors. But, you know, we're still, you know, it's always that upward lifting, I wouldn't say struggle, but there are strategies and things that you have to do in order to continue to move forward. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because I work with a lot of startup founders, and myself as an operator and founder of multiple companies, I understand some of the challenges that you went through initially, and you're probably still dealing with that, whether making those decisions, fundraising or not. But at the end of the day, it could be a very distracting exercise, because it's almost a full-time job when you're going through the fundraising route, as you go through dealing with investors, but also trying to build your company. So that's always that balance that every founder has to deal with. Someone recently categorized us founders as these kind of these folks with a permanent anxiety disorder with the focus on productivity. Okay. That we're just walking around with just permanent anxiety, just trying to be productive. So I thought that was pretty cool. So what are some of the trends and ideas that really excite you these days, as, you know, not only as the CEO and founder of your own company, but what are you researching? What kind of bets are you making? What do you see as the next big thing in the next few years?
Yeah, I am I'm just, you know, engulfed in new, because COVID happened, and of course we're going back into a state, but it's not the same state we just left from. So I see new things that weren't like popping before that are popping now, because folks are now more used to technology and being on the computer. I see go-to-market strategies have changed because of, you know, the COVID, and they're not going back to normal. So I see all these new opportunities for people to reinvent social norms. And I see that in the event space. That's why we are focused, you know, double down on focusing on growing that side of our technology, because we're at the cutting edge of, you know, of the future. It's also compared to what e-commerce did for physical retail, right? Because of the Shopify's of the world, now people are doing dual things. They're shopping and they're going online. They're probably doing both at the same time or on the same day. And I see that for a lot of things that are now socially okay, because folks have stayed at home for the whole year and they have no anxiety about doing that anymore. So I'm excited about events. I'm excited about online experiences that kind of replicate marketing techniques of how to keep people engaged with your marketing advertisement. If you want to sell products or you want to do online shopping, that's a growing space. And I see China really taking the lead with kind of the home shopping network experiences online. And, you know, we're doing that as well. So I'm interested in that space. That's the space I really love right now. That's what I see.
Sure. Yeah, definitely would love to pick your brain around that, because we organize a lot of events. We facilitate a lot of, you know, the executive roundtables and things like that with our networks. And it's always interesting and looking for ways to make that experience a lot more organic and natural, and it's very challenging, especially in the virtual setting. So definitely gonna try to pick your brain a little bit around that. As a CEO and founder of your own company, surrounding yourself with like-minded people and, you know, just A players is, I'm sure, at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're recruiting actively or not. I've been there, I am there, I live and breathe that. Share with us any of the strategies that really help you bring like-minded folks, bring the top talent to your teams. How do you succeed in that space? What maybe you have learned through some of the activities that you went through? Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, I can't say I'm an expert in that yet. You know, and in the beginning phases of growing your startup, the resources are a lot, right? You have people that can really help you grow from the early stage. But when you get into the later stages, it's really hard to find those folks. Of course, you gotta have capital to pay them. You know, no one's at that stage is working for under their value, and your company may or may not be that valuable for them to want the equity that, you know, you kind of dangle in front of folks in the beginning stages. So now, you know, we reached a stage where, you know, the resources that we started with aren't the resources that we're going in the future with. So now I'm finding, what exactly do I need for scale and growth and for folks to help me with strategy? Because another thing you realize is that you as a founder can't do everything anymore. You can't be the smartest person in the room, and you can't hold all the knowledge and expect to succeed to the levels that whatever your brain is telling you you're going. So finding people right now is me really networking within my cohort of founders and CEOs and seeing who has left something similar, or who's ready to go, or who came from corporate and did a really good job that I can give a bigger position to, or more opportunity for leadership. It's matching them, their needs to your needs, and seeing where that can go. And that's not everybody. They may not even be looking for a job. It might be an opportunity that they're looking for. So I'm really involved in that process right now as we're raising our next round and making sure that we have those people on board to get us to that next level. So no answers, but good strategy. That's what I have for you right now.
Right, absolutely. And that makes sense. But in the current market, with everyone being virtual, a lot of companies and people thought that, oh, great, I'm going to get this tremendous access to candidates and skill set all over the world. But they overlooked the aspect of the competition. Now, every other company is out there for the same talent, and they probably have a lot more to offer. So the candidate, or kind of that employee retention, becomes even more important in that aspect, because everyone's headhunting, everyone is after the top talent. What's working for you, or maybe not, when it comes to your employee retention? What are some of the things that you do that really help you keep your core team around you?
Well, we are growing our team. Honestly, it's been a lot of me and our technology, our team of developers is really, you know, a nice team. I've worked with them for, you know, since the duration of this, and they're great. And they believe in the mission. They are creatives themselves, or have loved ones that they want to, you know, say that they created technology to support their livelihoods. So our development team was great. I think for us is where we are right now, we need, because of our slight pivot or our growth in the event space, it's more customer oriented. That means our business team has to scale out. It can't just be me answering emails. There's one-on-one customer engagement that's new. There's more projects, there's event, there's production. So we are just in the midst of growing that side of team, And, you know, we're very small till we aren't. So how do we retain these folks? Well, they're mission oriented too. They come from media and entertainment. They see the value of what we're doing, and more so they see an opportunity to grow with a company and, you know, quickly take on leadership roles if they are, you know, if they put themselves out there and kind of, you know, come up with ideas and how we can scale in our strategy.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's very important, especially at the very beginning when you're the CEO, you set that vision, you set that strategy, and getting people that buy into that, it's so far most important, you know, especially at the very early stage like this, because that will push them to, you know, work harder, work more, and be kind of that self-sufficient team. So I like that analogy. When, as far as kind of that future of work, where do you see the kind of the industry in general shifting towards to, or do you think we will stay as is, a lot of companies shifting to kind of hybrid modes, whether you're working partially virtually, partially in the offices? How are you preparing for that?
I believe at least for the next 5 years, and don't ask me why five, but it seems like, you know, norm, social norms and things change within, you know, 5 year increments. This is from my research. People will still be at home. The at home was a, you know, I remember working in corporate America. It was always thought you don't do as much as home. Like, these people are getting away with stuff at home. And now we see that people are doing way more at home than they do in the office, because they're home and they don't have all that, you know, that social distraction, which could be good in some certain areas and not in, in others. So I don't think this is going away. I think office buildings are going to have a challenge because they have to fill those spaces. But, you know, there are environments where you do need to be in there. I think those folks would figure out strategies in order to give people the freedom of that at-home working will that provide you, even if they don't necessarily have to be at home. So I think we're in the wild, wild west of seeing where founders really come to light and shine and create these opportunities. That's why I was like, I love this time, because everyone has a chance, an opportunity to start something new and solve problems that we didn't have a year and 18 months ago. So I don't think hybrid or virtual is going away. I think it's just going to grow, and it's going to grow per section and per industry need, and it's going to get more niche. And we're going to see this next flow of kind of likely to CRM tools that, you know, are for per industry. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, definitely going to help the labs grow as well, right? For the people to collaborate virtually together.
So yeah.
It's a kind of, it should be a win-win. In closure, I'd like to talk a little bit about your personal, you know, resources for your content diet. What do you consume on a daily basis when it comes to learning, getting better, self-improvement? Share with us any resources that are useful to you on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm a book reader. So I love when people recommend books, especially smart folks that I know are doing, you know, really awesome things. I want to know what they focus their time and their brain power on. So I tend to get book recommendations. I read the scam, the news for things in events, things in SaaS technology. I follow music technology news. Just things that pertain to my industry and looking for trends or looking for new ideas as well, new people, new players, new potential partners or competitors. So I think I have step like the algorithms just know what I am looking for every day, because it just shows up on my news feed. Outside of that, I have to intentionally go to read because I am busy as a founder, but I do realize that if I don't, I miss out on key things that could help with my strategy, could help me not do that particular strategy because someone else kind of proved it wrong or right in some way. So I don't do as much reading as I want to, but when I do, it is because it's recommended or it's some industry thing that I need to know in order to do my business.
Well, you couldn't have set me up any better for my last question I wanted to ask is, what book are you currently reading? And what if it's different from that one, which one do you always recommend to others and why is that?
Well, instead of a book, I consistently listen to Startup Therapy, which is a podcast by startup.com. And it is important, you know, I stress mental health for founders because it's not easy what we do. And we're consistently doing things that normal folks stay away from because it's painful or, you know, or it's just, you don't want to be rejected. You don't want, you know, customers talking, you know, trying to complain. You don't want all this stuff, but we are consistently being put in Dallas position or putting ourselves in those positions. So mental health and is important. I think why I listen to the podcast is because there are people out there that goes through the very same thing you do, and understanding that is something not as unique as you think. You're able to see past it, go past it, solve it. The stress level goes down. So that's my real life therapist, you know, and so I'm a part of that organization.
Right. No, absolutely. And for our listeners, we'll make these recommendations available in episode notes. And leads me to the last point. You've mentioned that, you know, the mental health and all of that great stuff, you know, it makes sense. And a lot of times, at least from my perspective in the startups or companies that I invest in, I view the founders almost as professional athletes because you have to take into account everything when it comes to their lifestyle, you know, the diet, the mental fitness, all of that great stuff. And, you know, my analogy is that founders have to be treated exactly the same way as the professional athletes are. At the end of the day, it's, you know, they're leading the company 24/7. So that's just kind of my take into that. And I'll leave kind of that conversation at that. Farah, thank you so much for your insights today. We're definitely going to stay in touch, do another episode in about a year, see how much have changed and how you guys are dominating your industry.
Thank you so much for having me. And you're on my top podcast list. And I'm just looking forward to this episode and all the episodes moving forward.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.